When the Apostle Paul said, if anyone is not willing to work, does not work, he should not eat either. We know when you put other scriptures, you know, you have to use good Bible study to interpret a scripture. You can't say, well, anyone who does not work, neither shall he eat. We know it means he's not willing to work, because the Apostle Paul was very loving to the poor. When he was in front of Felix in the book of Acts, chapter 24, beginning in verse 15, he says, he's making a defense of himself. You know, he was accused of the Jews, you know, and he had to make a defense of his position. And he says, having hope in God, which these men cherish themselves, that there shall certainly be a resurrection of both the righteous and the wicked. The Apostle Paul. You know, I don't know how churches today read that and pass right over it. There will be a resurrection of the righteous and the wicked. There are many Sunday churches that do not understand that. In view of this, I also do my best to maintain always a blameless conscience, both before God and before men. Verse 17, Acts 24, verse 17. Now, after several years, I came to bring alms, A-L-M-S, which meant gifts to the poor, to my nation, and to present offerings. And when we read in Galatians chapter 2, when Paul went before Peter and James and the others, and because they were questioning his apostleship, you know, are you really an apostle? And Paul says, well, I went before them. If you don't think I'm an apostle, I went. And they recognize in verse 9, Galatians 2, verse 9, and recognizing the grace that had been given to me, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship, so that we might go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. Verse 10, they only asked us to remember the poor, the very thing I also was eager to do. Paul was eager to take care of the poor people. He did. So when it's this command that says, you know, don't do this, it wasn't really a command that if a person were sick or poor beyond what they could help. It just meant people who were unwilling to do so. Now, the Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 5, 8, said, you know, that if anyone does not provide for his own, he has denied the faith. We talked about that, leaving a legacy last time. Denied the faith. Now, what does he mean, denied the faith? Again, we just have to make sure we get those things right. Doesn't mean that he said, I don't believe in Jesus. I reject salvation. I hate God. That's not what he means. The phrase denied the faith has to do with one's the ability to show the faith, what God's people, how they live in a practical way, so that people will admire Christians, will admire true Christians. It doesn't mean that he has denied Jesus Christ. It refers to the witness to the community. And in 1 Timothy chapter 5, you know, in verse, let me read that real quickly. 1 Timothy 5, verse 7, Paul writes, prescribe these things. Now, he's talking about the widows, you know, and who gives herself the wanton, you know, the people that honor widows who are widows indeed and so on. And if a woman is wanton and she's going out, that's not good. But he says, now, tell Timothy, prescribe these things as well, so that they, all of the Christians, all the people serving God's church, may be above reproach. And the next verse then says, if anyone does not provide for his own, he's worse than, he has denied the faith. He's denied the faith in that he is not above reproach to outsiders, not denied the faith in that he doesn't believe in Jesus. Okay? And in chapter 3 of 1 Timothy, I believe it is, verses 4 and 5, you see that same phrase about the bishop, the overseer, 1 Timothy 3, verse 4, he must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. Because if a man doesn't know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And then he has, and the new converts, he has to be, you see, above reproach. Notice that in verse 2. He has to be temperate, hospitable, above reproach. That is, he can't be so living such a bad lifestyle. You can't have your overseer, your pastor, your bishop out carousing around at night in a bar and, you know, and things like that. He can't be doing that kind of stuff because that's not above reproach. He gives a false or bad reputation to the church. It doesn't mean that he has left Christ. It means that he's not living a life in which people on the outside can't admire. Okay, now we come to Philippians chapter 4. The Apostle Paul, in talking about wealth and talking about need, he comes to chapter 4, and it's a very interesting statement here, and I want to deal with this in verse 11. He says, not that I speak of want. Now he tells him in verse 10 how he appreciated, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that you, that now at last I received your concern for me. Because they sent some gifts through Titus and Tychicus and some of these others. They sent gifts to Paul, helping him out in his ministry. The Philippian church did participate very strongly in his ministry. Now, verse 11, now that not that I speak of want. I'm not talking that I have to have things, I'm so needy. For I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I have learned to be content. Now, what does that word mean, I've learned to be content? The Greek word means, it means to be self-sufficient or sufficient. I don't complain. I'm sufficient unto myself. I'm able to live without wanting to grab and ask everybody to help me. I've learned that I don't have to yell for help all the time. That's implied by that Greek word. So he says in verse 12, I know how to get along with humble means. I know how to get along. I don't cry. I don't beg. I don't complain when I have humble means. I don't have much. Paul said there were times when he didn't have much. I know how to live in prosperity. No, two things. I know how to get along with not much. I know how to live with a lot. You know, whichever way. I know how to live with a lot. I know how to get along without much. In verse 12, this is Philippians 4, verse 12. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry. The secret of it. I've learned how to be not complaining, self-sufficient, content. The Greek word has to do with having a self-sufficiency, contented with, I don't cry out, I don't beg, I don't ask, I'm not crying about it, please help me, I just, okay, I don't have much today, I don't have much. I have a lot tomorrow, I have a lot. That's it. I have learned the secret in whatever circumstance I am of going hungry and both of having an abundance and suffering need. Now, I want to tell you something. The Apostle Paul learned something that everybody in the world should have to be happy, to be contented. He knows how to do it. There are a lot of people who don't know how to do that. They know how to do it when they're up here, but they don't know how to do it when they're... Or they know how, by the way, they know how to do it when they're down here and don't know how to do it when they're up here. Okay? They're good when they don't have much. Give them a lot and they kill themselves, you know, because they just overdo it and they're out spending and they go crazy with it, and the next thing you know, they have infected themselves in all kinds of ways by doing too much. Paul said, I know the secret. I know the secret. In every circumstance, I've learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, of having an abundance and suffering need. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. Now, he's talking about godliness, and you'll see it here in, and this is where the passage we originally started this whole series with. He says, he's talking about people who are conceited, knowing nothing. This is the heretic, the people who are advocating different doctrines and so on, and their disputes and questions. They want to go, they want to get into controversial questions and disputes about words and envy and striving and abusive language and suspicions. They get into arguments and they swear at you and they fight and they call you names and they're abusive, and there's a constant friction between men of depraved mind and of deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. They suppose that being godly is a means of gain. They want to use religion for means of gain. But godliness, verse 6 now, actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. Accompanied by contentment. What do we mean by contentment? That's that feeling of being, having a state of adequate sufficiency, of being a competent. It means the state of one who supports oneself without aid. Person who is sufficient to himself. That's the idea of the contentment here. It's a Greek word. It means self-sufficiency. Godliness is a means of great gain when it's accompanied by self-sufficiency. I don't have to cry and beg for everything. Ungodliness is a means of great gain. Then he says in verse 7, "For we brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either." My translation says we can't take anything out of it either. It is very difficult for all of us to think in terms of whatever we have, one day it doesn't matter, it won't be ours. It'll pass to somebody else. Things that you cherished, it'll just go. It's very hard for us to think. They used to tell Jack Benny, what are you going to do with your money? Well, I'm going to take it with me. the old joke. Well, I'm going to take it with me. And the kings of Egypt wanted to be buried with certain amount of gold or silver for the next life. Let's send it off to them. And they put foodstuffs in these coffins and places where they were the tombs, so that they would take it. They would idea, well, here, go for the next life. But you can't take it. And by the way, when we dig up those tombs, guess where that stuff is? It's still there. He didn't take it anywhere. It didn't go anywhere. It's still there. You can't take it with you. So he says, we brought nothing into the world. We can't take anything out of it. And that goes along with the scriptures in the Old Testament, Psalm 49, verse 17. It talks about when a person dies, for when he dies, he will carry nothing away. His glory will not descend after him. I don't care how much glory you have in this life. When you die, it won't go with you. You can't take anything after you. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 15, what does it say? As he came, talking about man, humans, as he came naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. So no matter how much you gather, no matter how much you go out and get, no matter how many jewels you acquire, no matter how many possessions you have, you cannot, you will not take it with you. So the Apostle Paul, coming back to 1 Timothy now, 1 Timothy chapter 6, says, yeah, for we brought nothing into the world, we're not taking anything out. Verse 8, if we have food and covering, clothing, with these we shall be content. You know, he had talked about contentment, godliness with is great gain when accompanied by contentment. If we have food and covering with these, we shall be. Let's be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and snare and many foolish and hurtful desires and plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. And some longing for it have wandered away from the faith and placed themselves with many and pierce themselves with many griefs. So if we have food, if we have clothing, if we have the things necessary for life, let's be content, he says. Now, does that mean that you can't have any goals to improve yourself or improve your financial position? Of course not. Of course you should have goals. Of course you should want to be working. And what does the Bible talk about? Work with your hands. Work. Do your own work. Earn money. And I think that each person, especially godly people, have a duty. If you can earn money in an honest and profitable, proper way without leaving the faith, you should do it. And you should work as hard as you can and make as much money as you can without killing yourself. Now, some people want to go and make a lot of money. They'll kill themselves doing it. You know, they'll go day and night. They work themselves into a froth. They give themselves a heart attack and all that. But if you can make money, get your night's sleep, take care of your health, take care of your family, but you have a job and where you can make money and you can save and you can build up your finances, why not? Why not do that? Absolutely. But it has to be there. But that's not going to make you rich. You're not going to get rich. You know, there are people who are really rich. You know, like Bill Gates can give $1 billion away, and he's got a billion. You know, you and I will never see a billion in our lifetime. And all your money that you've ever earned and then spent will never make even a dent in a billion. Okay? If you spend $1 a second from the time you were born, it will take you 32 years to spend your first billion. That's $1 a second. That's $60 a minute. That's $3,600 an hour. If you spent that from the time you were born, you wouldn't finish a billion until you were 32. I have not yet. I just passed living more than 2 billion seconds. I will be lucky if I live 3 billion seconds. That'll put me at age 96. I've passed 2 billion, so I'm well on my way. But if I make 96, I'll make 3 billion seconds. So how much is a billion? It's a lot. It's a lot of things, whatever you count. So he says, yeah, and I think you have a duty to earn is honestly and properly, if you're in the right profession and you do the right thing and you can earn it and it comes, you know, it's available to be harvested. You know, the Bible calls you a sluggard if you don't get out and harvest. If it's there, the harvest is there and you don't do it, get out and do it. Have enough. Here's in 2 Corinthians now, moving to 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And God is able to make all grace abound to you so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. That's the New American Standard Version of 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8. Now, during 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, he's asking the Corinthian church to contribute to the poor. But he says that God will bless you. Listen to this in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 8. And God is able, I'm reading it from the New English Translation now, and God is able to make all grace overflow to you, so that because you have enough of everything in every way, at all times, you will overflow in every good work. Here's our goal financially. Here's our goal: to have enough of everything, every need. Enough food, enough clothing, enough shelter, enough warmth. Okay? Enough money to take care of our bills. Have enough of everything in every way at all times. If you have that, you will then have enough to overflow to good works, to be able to help somebody else, to give something to somebody else. As Paul said in Ephesians, let the person who stole steal no more, but rather work with his hands, work on his own, work, do his own responsibility so that he might have enough to help others. So the goal is to have enough, that is, to have a state where you have adequate sufficiency, an adequate amount, being in a state where there's an adequate enough competence. In the book of Hebrews now, here's what we read. So by the way, what it says here, having enough, it means, this Greek word in the book of 2 Corinthians 9, where it says having enough of everything, because the Greek word has two sides to it. One is an internal side, which means being content with your circumstances. And the other is an external side, which means actually having enough self-sufficiency. So you have the Greek word in two ways. The external means the state of what is adequate, having enough. Then the internal side is being contented with it. Hebrews chapter 13. So we have goals here for ourselves. Something you should put in your notes for you to do. Having enough. Your goal is to have enough, to have sufficiency all the time so you might help other people. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Your life should be free from the love of money, says Hebrews. Be satisfied with what you have, for he himself said, I will never leave you or forsake you. Let me read that in the new, that was in the Christian Standard Bible. Here's the New American Standard Bible. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. He has said that. By the way, that phrase is a quotation from Old Testament scriptures. I'll talk about that in a minute. The New English translation of this same verse, Hebrews 13, verse 5. Your conduct must be free from the love of money, and you must be content with what you have. The word content, again, has to do with satisfaction. It means to have enough, sufficient, adequate. The same Greek word is used when the Apostle Paul went to Jesus and he went to God and he said, you know, well, please take this thorn from my... I had a thorn, you know, in my flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me. I asked the Lord three times, take this away from me. And what did God say? My grace is sufficient for you. In other words, you need nothing more than my grace at this point. And you'll see that in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9. Same word where he says, be content. Okay, your conduct must be free from the love of money. You must be content, sufficient. You must be satisfied, have a sufficient, my grace is sufficient for you. Now, the quotation from the Old Testament, you wonder where the Hebrews got this thing, I will never leave you nor forsake you. That was said a number of times in the Old Testament. In First Chronicles, for instance, David said this to his son Solomon. Here's what in the First Chronicles 28 and verse 20 and verse 21. Be strong and be courageous. Act, do not fear nor be dismayed, for the Lord my God will be with you. He will not fail you nor forsake you until all the work for service of the house of the Lord is finished. David said that to Solomon. Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 6. Moses talking to the children of Israel before they go into the land of promise. Moses said, "Be strong, be bold, don't be afraid or be frightened of them. For the Eternal, your God, is going with you. He will neither fail you nor abandon you." Deuteronomy 31 and verse 8, Moses repeats it. "The Eternal is the one who will go before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid or be discouraged." And in Joshua 1, where God now is speaking to Joshua himself, he says to Joshua in verse 5, "No man," Joshua 1 verse 5, "no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you." So what does Hebrews say? Keep yourself free from the love of money. Be satisfied with what you have, for he has said, I will not leave you or forsake you. Now, we have a scripture that I think is very applicable to what we've been talking about through this whole series. This is our concluding scripture for this series, but it will take some explanation. This is 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And the Apostle Paul makes this statement in verse 30. As he's talking about the Corinthians living in this age, living in a time, and he says this the Common English Bible. Now, some of these translations do a little bit more than translate, they kind of interpret, which is okay. Common English Bible says in verse 30, 1 Corinthians 7, "Those who are sad should be like people who aren't crying. Those who are happy should be like people who aren't happy. Those who buy something should be like people who don't have possessions." Think that? Let me read that again in the New International Version. Verse 30, 1 Corinthians 7. "Those who mourn as if they did not. Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep." From the New Jerusalem Bible, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 30. "And those who mourn as though they were not mourning. Those who enjoy life as though they did not enjoy it. Those who have been buying property as though they had no possessions." Now, why does he say that? Now, verse 31, I'm going to read that in the Common English Bible. "Those who use the world should be like people who aren't preoccupied with it. Because this world and its present form is passing away." Complete Jewish Bible says this, "And those who deal in worldly affairs as if not engrossed in them, because the present scheme of things of this world won't last much longer." So 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 30 and 31. I'm going to read it now in the New American Standard Version. It goes like this. "And those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. Those who buy as though they did not possess. And those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. For the form of this world is passing away." One of my pieces of advice for my clients has been, "And this too shall pass." And this too shall pass. This will not last. Are you happy? Okay, but just remember, you don't have to get, don't think that that's your state of affair. I think this is what the apostle, he didn't mean that you can't be happy and don't enjoy being happy. He didn't mean if you're crying, well, then you're not really feeling it. What he's meaning is this: don't think that that state of affairs that you have today is the state that will stay with you always. It won't. Things change. Your life is changing. It's changing gradually. You know, I knew some of you when I had black hair. And some of you knew me. And I knew some of you when you didn't have so many wrinkles. I knew some of you when you were much younger. And so the state that we're in is not the state that we'll stay in. Are you happy today? I'm glad for you to be happy today, but you need to recognize that that state is not a state that will last forever. If you're crying today and you're unhappy, you need to recognize that state is not a state of life that will last. It's going to pass. That state will pass. If you're very sad and you feel like the whole world is down on you, don't worry. That state will pass. Don't think that's a state that's going to last forever. If you have things, don't think that's where your life is. Don't think that that's what makes you happy. And that's what, you know, for those who have things as though they did not have them to keep. They weren't theirs. Because you and I know what is going to happen when we die. The things we have are not ours. It's going to pass on to somebody else. It's not yours to keep forever. So the Apostle Paul is telling us to be contented. Hebrews tells us to be contented. He says, I've learned the secret of wherever I am, therewith to be content. I know how to have a lot, and I have to know how to have little. In whatever circumstance I'm in, whether I'm crying, I know that's not going to last forever. Whether I'm happy, that's not going to last forever. Whether I have a lot of things, that I'm not going to keep those forever. Even when you have possessions in this life, how many possessions do you think you've had in this life that you do not have now? Think about it. Things that you've had, toys, whether you had toys, cars that you had, clothing that you had, a wonderful pair of shoes that you liked years ago. You had this kind of thing. You had that kind of thing. You had this ballpoint pen that you just loved, but it's gone now. How many things that you had, you don't have now? They've passed away. They've gone. You lost them, you gave them up, they broke, they got rusty, they got this or that or the other thing. There are a lot of things don't last. So when you talk about the Bible and wealth and money, you have to recognize that the Bible does not have in one section of it a complete definition on this subject of wealth and money. It does not. You have to go to many different, as we have been doing in this series, the scripture here, a scripture there, a place here, a place there, getting it all together, trying to put it and make good sense of it. The Proverbs, which were written by wise men, have a different perspective. The Proverbs, as we said, have a very practical view of which is individually focused. It's focused on you. It balances, and it must be balanced, and it does balance out other scriptures. Because you have to work hard. You have to give it up early. You have to do things. You can't be a sluggard. That's what the Proverbs tell us. The New Testament tells us that we cannot be seduced by wealth and riches. So our priorities are misplaced if either capitalism, socialism, communism are our only guides of life. Why and how one succeeds, why you succeed, and how you succeed is more important than what you have accumulated. And success is far more than the things we have. It's far more than the money you have in the bank. Success is your personal growth, your personal character. Keep your character free from the love of money. And accumulation of wealth must be balanced with true worship. We cannot serve God and serve mammon wealth. You cannot serve them. You can only serve God. You cannot serve wealth. And we do have a responsibility when we get wealth. We have a responsibility of stewardship, using it properly, using it righteously, using it in a holy manner, that will benefit you as a person. I used to say to people when they went to the feast, a lot of people saved one-tenth of their income when they went to the feast and spent it all in 9 days, one-tenth of their entire year's salary or worth. Spent it all in 9 days. I said, how did you spend that money? What did you spend it on? And well, my kids wanted more milkshakes, and we wanted more of this, and we got to buy a lot of candy, and I had a lot of drinks, and I had one. Yeah, they spent a lot of stuff. Well, did you improve your health during the feast? Did you spend it on food that was nutritious and health build your body and your health and your mind during the feast? Did you maybe buy a book that you could help increase your knowledge and understanding during the feast? Or did you just spend it on silly things? Some candy for the kids, some milkshakes, some candy bars, some ice cream, some, forgive this, yogurt land. And you just went and you just piled it up. What did you do during the feast that benefited you? Stewardship. Using your money to make you better as a person. Stronger, healthier, more intelligent, more wiser. What did you do? So the accumulation of wealth must be balanced with, first of all, worshiping God, not serving wealth, and a responsibility of stewardship. And that includes helping people who need help when they need help. The stewardship of service. We all have that. We all have that responsibility. The love of money is a root of all evil, but the love of God is a root of all righteousness.